So imagine only having one source of income and only having stocks, which by the way, could go up and down and could the market could crash in the next few days. I'm not saying it would, but then all of a sudden your balance gets cut in half. What are you going to do then? So in my mind, the bigger risk is inaction because that's also a choice, and not having a backup plan is also a huge risk that you take.
Welcome to the Real Freedom Show, where we inspire you to pursue your passion to gain time and financial freedom through opportunities in real estate. I'm your host, Mike Swenson. Let's get some real freedom together. Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Real Freedom, Real Estate Leverage Freedom, where we talk about different ways that you can build time and financial freedom through opportunities in real estate. I'm your host, Mike Swenson. If you want to get started on your real estate investing journey, check out our website, freedomthroughrealestate.com. We put all of our episodes on there, articles. Really, we want to just tell great stories to inspire you. Hopefully, a story that you listen to, there's some connection point, something that pushes you in the direction to take action and pursue your dreams in real estate, because there's a lot of great reasons to invest in real estate. And I know our guest today, Steve Carroll, is going to be able to tell you why there's so many awesome ways to invest in real estate. So Steve has a background in wealth and money management, realized that so many people are doing that through real estate, got more into real estate, and you are exploring pretty much every asset class that's out there, from multifamily, mobile home parks, hospitality, business ownership, you name it, as well as working a W-2 job. So you've got a lot of great stories, a lot of great information for us to share. So excited to have you on the show today.
Thanks for having me, Mike. Great connecting with you. And I'm excited to share a lot of this stuff. I've made a lot of mistakes over the years and learned a lot too. So happy to help people learn from my experience and also accelerate their journey by helping people not making the same mistakes. But I think the biggest thing that excites me about all of this real estate investing and everything that people like you and I are doing is it's looking at things a little differently than the traditional way of investing. You know, most people know about mutual funds. You hear about investing in stocks and bonds. People don't really talk about real estate, and they don't even know how to get started. And if they do, they're a little afraid of it, don't even know where to begin. And so that's why I love the fact that you're educating people and we get the opportunity to have conversations like this. So more people are aware of what you can do and they can educate themselves on how to do it for themselves if it makes sense.
Yeah, I think with stocks and mutual funds, obviously there's complexity to it, but like I know if I buy Apple stock, I can watch the ticker and I can see what happens to it. Or if I buy a stock that has dividends, like I can see all that stuff. Real estate, there's just so much more to it because there's different asset classes, there's different markets, whole different ways that you can structure things. And that's the hard thing for people to wrap their head around, especially if they haven't done real estate before. But talk about kind of your initial interest into real estate and kind of digging into real estate to hear the why behind it. Because yeah, and then we can unpack all the reasons and the hows to it. But in terms of the why, like why real estate versus some of those other things that you've seen? And to remind people, you can also diversify. You can do both. So there's lots of things to do. But kind of what were those seeds planted in real estate as you started to dig more into it?
Well, when I graduated from college, I was trying to get my first finance job in corporate finance. It was just, you know, what you did in the tri-state New York area, that, you know, went to school, got my degree, you get a job, you become successful, whatever that means, and life is good. And I graduated in June of 2008. And if you all remember what happened in 2008, the legs fell out of the financial markets. And then next thing you know, I was interviewing for entry-level jobs with 20-year bond traders. So it was very difficult to find a good job. But what I did was I actually got a job in customer service with a wealth management. I was actually a retirement planning company back when the joke was your 401k became a 201k. That was the joke. It wasn't a joke for a lot of people. It's very difficult. And I, you know, when I got into that business, I realized how many people didn't even realize what investing was. They didn't know how to properly manage their money. But then as I worked my way up into becoming basically a financial advisor, I got all the licenses that all the financial advisors have. And I started working with clients. I realized that the people with money were not the financial advisors, although they did well, but it was the people on the other side of the table who owned businesses and real estate, had great tax deductions. And I realized like that, I want to do that. And then I also met my wife, who is a nurse. She's a cardiac nurse and one of the best nurses out there. She's so compassionate, but working her job, it's very heavy labor. And you know, she's doing CPR for 2 to 3 hours a day, and it's very demanding physically. And she doesn't have a retirement plan. Like, there's no pensions anymore. Like, you know, she's gonna work this job until she physically isn't able. And so that's why I looked at how do we build a backup plan. And so we looked to real estate for not only just the benefits and the income, but more of the long-term strategy around alternatives to like pensions. There is no pension. Okay, so we can create our own through real estate. If we pay this off in 30 years, great. We each have a duplex, and now that'll pay for our income or for our expenses when we retire to supplement Social Security. So, we got into that. So my wife and I got into each buying a duplex. We bought some short-term rentals just to explore that asset class, and then moved up into larger real estate from there to the tune of 116 multifamily units, 135 mobile home park pads, a 24-key boutique motel, and a small business, a commercial kitchen hood cleaning business in Kansas City. That's a little bit of my background and how I got started and why I love real estate. I will tell you, it is a get rich slow plan. I don't believe in any get rich quick plan, but it's one of the best strategies and is going to be a huge win for our future.
I mean, obviously you're working your job during the day too. To be able to do all that stuff is pretty impressive outside of, you know, kind of regular work hours. How are you able to balance, or not necessarily balance, but even like keep kicking the can down the road and keep things moving forward while working, you know, a normal job during the day as well?
Yeah, that's a really great question. And I should mention that after my wealth management career, I did that for 12 years, but then I got my MBA and actually went to work as a switch careers as into got into tech sales. So I work at W2 now in tech sales, which is great. But to your point, it is a lot. And I hear a lot of people say, oh, well, I have a family, I just don't have time. I've got two jobs, or I've got a job, or I've got, you know, I just don't have time. You will make time for the things that are important to you. And in fact, most of the people that I talk to that say, I don't have time. And then you ask them, have you seen this or this show on Netflix? And they're like, oh yeah, I binged the whole season. Like, well, you got time for what you make time for. So I spend a good amount of time focusing on investing in real estate, but most importantly, surrounding myself with other people, because real estate's a team sport. So I've met people through masterminds, through meetups, through speaking to my community, and I've got individuals who help. So I know my skill set is communicating with people. I know that I love talking to brokers. I'll talk to people who have money that want to invest, because they're like, I don't know how to do this stuff, but I don't want to swing a hammer. And we help them do that and get double-digit returns. But I found people that are great at the things I don't like underwriting. I don't like underwriting. I can do it, right? I understand it and I understand exactly how it works. But I don't enjoy sitting in front of a spreadsheet, right? In front of a computer all day. So I like to trade that off or give that to someone else. And so partnering is really important. Finding people that do the things that you don't want to do and have that alternative skill set, and will help partner with you throughout this process. Because you're going to have a lot of questions when you get into it. And it's, you know, there's every day there's something new, right? There's a new scenario that you didn't expect. There's, you know, something goes wrong with the property, a landlord issue. There's things that go wrong. And it's always great to be able to lean on someone while you're in and invested in real estate too.
And you mentioned partnering through people. Yeah, I mean, for you to be able to invest in multifamily, mobile home parks, hospitality, business ownership, like I think sometimes people listening to this feel like they have to know everything about everything. And so it's like, well, geez, I got to learn five different asset classes. How can I even get good at that? Well, the secret sauce there is go find people in each of those asset classes that know what they're doing and build a relationship and find out how you can add value to them and help them grow their businesses. Are you looking to get started or scale in real estate investing but don't know your next step? Are you overwhelmed thinking about finding deals, analyzing deals, doing due diligence, and managing properties on top of it? Go ahead and push the easy button and invest with us. Real estate investing is what we do full time. We've done dozens of deals with hundreds of doors. We have the knowledge and experience to handpick the best deals that most investors can't find. We've got large off-market deals all the time where you can hopefully find returns and economies of scale that you just can't find on your own. The best thing is it's 100% passive to you for less capital than you put down trying to acquire a property on your own. Don't let this year go by where you don't make the leap, add to your portfolio, or you just sit in analysis by paralysis. To find out more, visit freedomthroughrealestate.com and click on invest. You can book a call and learn more there. So get to scaling your portfolio now with us by your side. Real quick, I just wanted to back up. You had mentioned about buying duplexes. For somebody starting off, you know, I know you had mentioned, you know, being able to have a duplex for each of you to kind of offset retirement expenses. Like for a lot of people, that might be where your real estate investing journey begins and ends, just as a starting point, right? Because just to be able to do that, have an asset that over 30 years is going to pay off, you know, you've seen that for people like, you know, we can talk about the super complex different asset classes and doing all that stuff. For a lot of people, it might just be go do that thing first, get that accomplished. And then after that, you can look at some of these other things. But just talk about that conversation about, you know, a duplex each for each of you.
Great point. I was actually talking to someone the other day about this, and she was like, "Yeah, I want to get into big multifamily, and I want to scale all these. I want to have 100 units." And we kind of slowed down the conversation. I backed it up, and I was like, "What's your goal? Like, why are you trying to do all this?" And I love that you go big fast. Like, I love that concept. But she is a very young person, and I said, "Well, hang on. First, if I were to look back at what I was doing, it's when I was living with my buddies back in post college." I would have bought a fourplex, lived in it, right? Because you only have to put you can get an FHA loan on up to four units, live in one unit, rent out the rest, have them pay for your rent, and then you can move out in the future. Now you own this thing. You only have to put 3% down. If I just bought a property as an investor, I have to put 25% down. Most banks will require you unless you're using private money. Right. So you're able to put less money down. You live in it for a little while, you get your feet under you, you learn the game. And then you're able to move out, and now you've got a fourplex working for you. So that's a really great way to get started. And so to your point, my wife and I, when we were getting started, she actually was buying a duplex because she wanted to do travel nursing. And she wanted to have a home base, but be able to go do travel nursing and then come back and have a place to stay. And that was it for her. Like she didn't even realize that like this could have long-term benefits. And then she started learning, oh, wow, there's depreciation. And then when they renovate, you know, those are write-offs and things like that. So, but anyway, so a duplex for her, like that was the end of the investing journey. And then her and I met, and then we realized, hey, this town that we're living in is blowing up and it's doing really well and we should buy another one. And so we did. In fact, I'm sitting in one of our rentals right now because we had owned a single family home and it was great. But it was old and it needed a lot of repair, didn't have central air. And so two years ago, I said, hey, you know, we could sell and make money on this and live in the rental for a while. We don't have a family yet. And so we moved into the rental, we renovated it. And the town is just blowing up, but we live in a rental unit. Our tenants pay most of our mortgage. We barely have a mortgage. And so even just for that, if you can do that, yeah, some people would say, I don't want to do that. But think about what that will do for the rest of your life. And now that we've renovated the apartment downstairs and this one, it's going to, when we actually just bought a house, it's going to pay for with the positive net income is going to pay for half our mortgage. And that's mm-hmm. the power of all this. So to your point, you don't necessarily need to go hundreds of units and all that. Start small, learn the game. And I'll say one other thing, not to go too long of a tangent. But I remember getting into it and I was like, ah, I'm a little nervous. I don't know if this is going to work. Is this property, is it the right one? I want something a little bit more up to date. And my wife asked me, and she was like, are you trying to make it work? Or are you trying to make it not work? And I realized I was so nervous about finding the perfect property. I was like, I don't know if this is going to work. And sometimes it just takes taking the risk and learning as you go. You don't have to know how to be a landlord, learn the rules, learn your laws. But sometimes jumping into things is the best way to get started. Worst case scenario, you have a physical object with wood and nails that you could sell in the future if you had to. But it's only been great for me.
And once you stretch that risk-taking muscle, it helps you to be able to take bigger risks. I remember I used to tell people when I worked in my W-2 job, I said I would describe myself as somebody that doesn't take a lot of risks. And then I go back and I look at it and it's like, well, we did turn our first initial property into a rental, bought a house, fixed it up, bought a short sale, fixed it up. And, you know, operated. And I still remember at that time when we owned all three of those properties, a good friend of ours had a daughter and somehow we were talking about it and she overheard and she had asked like, well, how come they have three properties? And they had just kind of, I don't remember what example they had given her. And she's like three or four at the time. And she's like, wow, they must have a lot of money if they have three properties. And in my head, I'm thinking I work for a nonprofit making basically nothing. My wife is still in grad school. And to this little child, she thinks like, oh, we've got a lot of money because we have three properties when we were underwater on the one, right? Like that's the reason why. But that stretched my risk-taking muscle for the future to be able to do other things. And so I still would describe myself as somebody that has a hard time taking risks, but once you stretch that muscle, it allows you to do it more.
Yeah. And risk is an interesting thing because people will look at certain things in terms of risk in a matter of what lens they look through, right? They may look at real estate as like, oh, that's risky because the tenant may not pay or whatnot. I look at risk as if you only have one source of income, right? Imagine you're working a job and look at what's happening in the marketplace now. And the market's doing pretty well right now, but I sell a lot of recruitment products in my enterprise sales job. And a lot of companies, they're not hiring as much. They're trying to find ways to do things with AI before they're hiring. There's still mass layoffs. Like things are not going as well. And the jobs report just came out that we apparently didn't have as good of a jobs season in the last 3 months than we thought. So imagine only having one source of income and only having stocks, which by the way, could go up and down and the market could crash in the next few days. I'm not saying it would, but then all of a sudden your balance gets cut in half. What are you going to do then? So in my mind, the bigger risk is inaction, because that's also a choice, and not having a backup plan is also a huge risk that you take.
Yeah. And I go back to my parents, both of them, when they were within 5 years of kind of retiring, had their job taken away from them and live in a small town. So like they can't find anything else. And their whole life had been save, put your money, you know, into something safe and stable, and, you know, might go get a W-2 job because it's safe and stable. And those things can be taken away from you just as easy as they're given from you. And so, you know, the struggles that I have, or the challenges that I have investing in real estate, I look back and say, well, you know, I still have 20 years to kind of figure this thing out and continue to grow in this before I get to the age where my parents that had put all their eggs in that basket and it was just, you know, yanked out from under them. And so that isn't very safe either. And so I'd rather have built that momentum over the next 20 years than not.
Yeah, my similar thing happened to my parents, and a pretty traumatic thing happened. Not traumatic thing happened to my dad, but he was let go very quickly, very suddenly, and in a way where he was all of a sudden left without a job, where he thought he had a few years left to get ready, but he'd only invested in safe things, you know, to money market accounts. But then when he looked back at his portfolio, and he was talking to me about it one day, we didn't really talk a lot of money when I was growing up. He was like, look, I've got this much saved. And we looked at his returns, and it was only like a 2-3% rate of return. And you look at what he could have made if he looked at real estate, which on average grows between 4-10%. And, you know, rent has only gone up. Real estate values have really only gone up on average over the last 100 years. It's one of the only more stable asset classes that exists. So if you think about that, where he could have been, as opposed to just investing in just safe things, he could be a lot farther along financially. And I think things are changing so much. What worked for our parents doesn't work for us anymore, especially with how expensive things are getting. And that's why I think real estate is a great way to offset and have some sort of backup plan, because people will always need a place to live, especially now when people can't afford to buy a house. They're going to need a place to live too.
Talk a little bit about the tax benefits. I want to make sure that we touch on that, because without investing in real estate and not experiencing that, oftentimes when you hear people talk about investing in real estate, it's, well, you know, somebody's paying your mortgage, you get a little bit of cash flow. Oh, and there's tax benefits, right? That is often just the asterisk aside that is like, oh yeah, and then there's some tax benefits. Talk about the real benefits that you can experience investing in real estate, because that's huge, to the point where a lot of people, that is why they invest in real estate. And oh yeah, the income is nice, but if you're a high income earner, the tax benefits are well worth it. Well, you know, other people might just see like, oh, I make $200 a month in cash flow, wonderful, but the tax benefits are huge. So talk about that.
Yeah, for sure. So there's a lot of really great tax benefits, and I've learned this through buying this property, but there's a lot you're going to want to make sure you do properly. Talk to your CPA. I will say, of course, I'm not an accountant, right? However, I've worked with accountants before, and I learned a lot of tax strategies in my wealth management career. And so the first thing, like very simply, we can talk about is very standard fact that the government allows you, when you buy an investment property, to depreciate that. Basically, you take whatever value that of the property you buy, let's say you spend $1 million, right? Let's just say that's the figure to keep it nice and easy. You can divide the value of that building over a period of 27.9 years. And so whatever that dollar amount is, so on $1 million, it'd be $27,900. You can offset, that is, can write off against your income, your taxable income. So that's the first thing, which is really helpful. The second thing is, especially if you buy your property and you own it in an LLC or in a business, number one for asset protection, but number two, if you buy within a business, that can offset some of the income that you generate from that property if you do repairs, if you fix it. So when you go put in a new kitchen in your own house, you're paying that with after-tax money, right? You made $50,000 after taxes, it's now $35,000, and that's what you use to build your kitchen. But if you have a property and it's a business and you file properly, if you're renovating, some of those repairs are tax deductible. And so that can offset your income on the property. It can offset the pass-through income that come to you as an individual. And so those are some of the big things. Just as an individual investor, if you have one or two properties, those are absolutely helpful. And then as you get into the bigger scale properties, I mean, we have a property that I'm invested in and actively working on as a general partner. And we did a lot of renovations. We did something called a cost segregation study. Now, this is taking it to the next level, right? So just keep that in mind. But we did a cost segregation study. And because I was an active partner on that deal, I was able to get a deduction this year of $44,000 against my active income, and I ended up getting a $26,000 tax return this year, where usually it was like I owed $3,000. And so for high income earners, this is how the wealthy don't exploit, but use the tax law to their advantage. And unless you knew that was a thing, people that were are they're missing free, not free money, but you're missing out on money that should be yours. So I always try to educate people on not only about how to make money, but how to keep more of the money that you make, because you pay a lot of taxes anyway.
Yeah, and I know for me, I shared our first cost segregation study that we did. Like when I'm presenting to people or, doing a little webinar talking about things, I can just share the example of what we were able to deduct, and I just show the actual statement of, hey, I think it was like $74,000. Like that is real money. And so now, the cost segregation study is a part of, all of our purchases that we have because, and we figure that into our costs when we're analyzing deals is like, well, here's how much the cost segregation study is because that can. And like you mentioned, help offset your income. And those things are big, right? A lot more than a, $200 a month cash flow on a rental property. And so that's big. Real quick then, you'd mentioned about partners and investing in other asset classes. Talk a bit about going from, okay, now we're starting with our duplex and now we're pursuing some of those other asset classes. What was it about exploring the other asset classes? Maybe it was diversification. It was obviously meeting the new people and the folks that, that they're investing in these other classes. But talk about that kind of going asset class by asset class as you go to have these other cool investment opportunities that you guys are now a part of.
Yeah, I probably do things a little bit differently. My wife and I both, we joke that we kind of do things in the backwards order. And I do advocate that, if you want to get into an asset class and you want to really learn it, dive in and learn it and understand it. And this has been happening over the last decade, right? So this didn't all happen within a year. But I like to diversify whenever I'm looking at investing in case one asset class, right? Let's multifamily. I invested in multifamily. It's been doing great. But then I thought, okay, multifamily is great. There's only so much you can raise rents. There's only so much that you can do in terms of the cost segregation study and pulling those deductions forward. But once you've done that, it's like, okay, that's great. What else is out there? Let's see what else could be a faster way to either accelerate benefits or depreciation or whatnot. And then I got involved with a partner who was looking at a mobile home parks and is very popular in the mobile home park space, Tim Woodbridge. And so with that, I had an old IRA sitting around and it wasn't doing much. And so I used a self-directed IRA and knowing that Tim does this very well professionally. And I said, hey, I want to learn this asset class. I invested with him in one of his syndications in order to take part in that and learn the asset class and decide, hey, is this something I want to get into? And through doing that, I realized that's a great asset class and it's really cool because you have the mobile home itself, and then you have the land that it sits on, and sometimes you're just charging for the land, which is really neat. Huge margins there. But I realized it wasn't the asset class for me, and I invest with the people that do it, keep it in my portfolio. But okay, great. I learned, and now I can keep going, and I can see what really works for me. Some of the other asset classes I got into, so I got into a boutique motel. I knew the South Carolina market because of my short-term rentals and had a partner who found a really great deal and we were able to buy it without going to a bank by raising capital. So that was really cool one, get into the little bit of the boutique hotel space and expand short-term rentals. And then from there, I realized that, again, that's great. And I trust an operator. Sometimes short-term rentals can be like a full-time job. And so that's where I was like, okay, what kind of asset class will allow you to create value and generate value over time? Is a surface that's necessary and is something where I can invest in it and actually affect the growth faster than you can with just bumping rents. And so I had again, with making partnerships, I had a friend, Pearson Charbonneau, who was buying a kitchen exhaust hood cleaning company. So whenever you sit at a restaurant, they have those big kitchen ovens in back and fryers and all that, and all the grease and smoke goes up and gets sucked out, and his company cleans that. And so he was buying one of the his he bought a hood clean company, and then he was buying one of his main competitors to shrink the competition in the market that needed a lot of opportunity for growth, or had a lot of opportunity for growth. And he was looking for partners. And so I invested with him, and I was helping out with the sales side because that's my experience. So now we've been able to take that and grow that exponentially, because every dollar he brings in is added to the value of the business. And then he can either sell that in a few years and exponentially 1, 2, 3, 4x the revenue he's generating, and then I get a return on that too. So I try to look at different asset classes, things that are necessary, and try to diversify. So in case a stock market changes, and I do have some money invested in the market too, but if things do turn around in one asset class, the others end up kind of shaking it all out, and I end up riding the wave up.
One thing I want to quick highlight that you mentioned and would love to hear about it. You mentioned about your boutique hotel in South Carolina, getting it directly from the seller, not having to get a mortgage, right? When we talk about benefits of real estate ownership, a lot of times people go back to like, what were they programmed to think? And right, it's like, I want to buy something in real estate. I've got to go get a mortgage on it. I got to go talk to a bank, or I've got to go talk to a lender. Well, there's ways to do that where you don't have to do that, right? You just go work with the seller and you can buy it directly from them. And, you know, I know when I was purchasing my first property, it's like, okay, I got to get my W-2 statements together. I got to get my taxes together. And when you work with other owners like that, you don't have to do that. Now, they still might want that information or something like that. But that's the other cool thing about real estate, is you can buy property from people without going through that process to qualify for a mortgage if you come to the right terms with them, because they understand my property makes money. I can count on these rents every month. And so they know if somebody else is managing that, that same thing is going to happen. And so these are the incredible benefits that we sometimes gloss over when talking about real estate, is that's an amazing opportunity to be able to do that.
Yeah. A lot of times people think, like, okay, even to buy the properties, I have to go to the market and see what's out there, and there's a lot of competition, and I'm going to get bid up. But there are ways to find properties off market. It's a little more hard to do. But in the case of this one, right, we're able to buy a property without having to go to a bank, without having to, come up, go to those, go come up with the same, like with the bank statements, personal guarantees, all that. We were able to work with the seller and understand what the seller wanted. And the seller just wanted to be able to go, retire, go back to a country that their family was in, and not have to worry about paying all that taxes up front. Imagine if they did sell traditionally, they were going to pay, they let's say sold it for $1 million, they're going to pay taxes on $1 million. We have the property, but we created a win-win situation when we said, hey, we're going to pay you over time. You want X amount of money. Okay, you know the property can do that. You trust us. We'll personally guarantee it, and then we'll pay you. We can pay them less than the bank. We don't have to jump through all the hoops. We don't have to go through all of that. And then we have a property that was off market, not as much competition, and we're able to pay less than traditionally we would have at a bank. So everybody wins, the seller wins, they're still getting a return on their money, and we win because we get the property. So many different ways you can get into real estate, and it's all about relationships. I think that's the thing people overlook the most. They see the property, they see all these units and how many doors. But don't forget, a lot of these properties, some are owned by some of the big players, but some are just owned by mom and pop or passed down to the family. These are human beings, and they want to retire, right? There's a lot of tired landlords out there that just they want a break. And so there's lots of companies that help you connect with those individuals. So keep your eyes open.
Awesome. Well, geez, there's so many great things that we could talk about. I mean, we could have dug deeper into any of these, but thank you so much for kind of allowing us to water ski through your experience and talk kind of high level on what you've done. For people that want to reach out to you or learn more about you or connect with you, how can they do so?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm on Instagram. You'll find me I created a profile called the Do Money Better Guy, because at work, I'm the guy they come to when people want to do money better. And then you can see I'm on LinkedIn, linkedin.com/in. LinkedIn/Stephen P. Carroll. You can reach out to me. I'm on Facebook. You can reach out to me at Stephen.Carroll@yahoo.com. I'm very accessible and love having these conversations. So connect with me. Love to talk and help you understand a little more how you can get into real estate too.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for coming on, sharing your wisdom. A ton of great stories, ton of great experience, and excited to see where things continue to grow for you in the future.
Thanks, Mike. Great to meet you. And thanks for the time.
At that point in time, I was in a very dark place. I mean, it was very depressing going from nothing to being like, hey, I'm the man, the most successful guy, you know, at my age, blah, blah, blah. And then back to like getting, you know, starting to lose everything. But what ended up happening was, for example, with those mortgages, those banks went under, they got, you know, absorbed and serviced by somebody else. And then they came back and I got modifications and my rates were 9 to 11% range. And they dropped them to 2%.
Welcome to the Real Freedom Show, where we inspire you to pursue your passion to gain time and financial freedom through opportunities in real estate. I'm your host, Mike Swenson. Let's get some real freedom together. Everybody, welcome to another episode of Real Freedom, Real Estate Leveraged Freedom, where we talk about different ways that people build and grow their financial freedom and also achieve time freedom through different opportunities in real estate. I'm your host, Mike Swenson. If you want to get started or research ways that you can get started on your real estate journey, go check out our website, freedomthroughrealestate.com. That's freedomthroughrealestate.com. We post all of our content there, episodes, articles, really just sharing stories of people in their entrepreneurial journey through real estate and just finding ways to build the life that they want. And so that's why we do this podcast, and so excited to share different stories. And I've got an awesome story to be able to share today. We've got Mateen Hagar here, a great story of kind of coming from nothing, building and growing, going through the subprime mortgage crisis, being able to experience that. But Mateen is owner of Remax Plus in the Philadelphia area and also has his own real estate team, has rental properties, and does a lot of different things. And so Mateen, I'll let you kind of share all of your accolades and your journey as we go, but we're so excited to have you on the show.
Great. No, I really appreciate it, Mike. Thank you for having me. So I've been in the real estate business just over 20 years. We have a Remax franchise with about 50 realtors. We have a property management business with over 1,000 units under management. We have a mortgage business, development business. Like you said, own a bunch of my own properties and started from nothing and just grew it to where it is today. So definitely very proud of that. And, you know, we're ranked in the top 5% of our MLS. So we do well with sales and volume and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, very active for sure.
It's a hard journey, and especially in today's real estate market, it feels like you're kind of running uphill here to be able to continue to build and grow. But talk about, you know, those early days. What I always am curious to hear is kind of why real estate? What is it going to do for you? Is it purposeful? Is it accidental when you kind of get started? And then we'd love to just continue to build that story and go as the episode goes on.
Sure. So, you know, like I mentioned, started with a very modest background. And, you know, I think the problem a lot of people have today, younger people especially, is they don't know what they want to do. They're kind of exploring too many options, all that kind of stuff. And, you know, that you can get analysis paralysis and overwhelmed thinking like that. And, you know, coming from nothing, my priorities were really simple and what I wanted and my goals and my direction was easy, where it was like, hey, look, I don't want to be poor anymore and I want to own a house. Because we didn't have a house, you know, living in a shoebox apartment, that kind of thing. So it was really clear and simple from an early age. So going down that path, you know, early on in high school, my brother introduced me to Rich Dad, Poor Dad. So, you know, of course, everybody mentions that. But that was a big part of shifting the mindset and, you know, really believing like anything is possible. And you can kind of go from nothing to something, especially in America. You know, we're blessed to live in this country. So, you know, it really is the land of opportunity. But, you know, growing up from nothing, I actually bought my first property in high school when I turned 18. Now, keep in mind, that was before the subprime crisis, you know, no doc, you know, low income, all that kind of stuff. My rates were high. But, you know, bought up my first property. That was a great experience. Then I went to college at Drexel University, studied engineering, bought more and more properties there, rented it to my friends. I lived one, bought another one, kept renting. And then soon a lot of my friends and their families and parents knew I was in the business, knew I had my license. And I got my license actually freshman year of college. So I started doing deals for my friends and their family, and I was born and raised in and around the Philadelphia area, so I had all my friends from high school, middle school, all that. So that was definitely a big help being from here. But one thing led to the other, grew the business, bought more and more properties, and of course the mortgage crisis happened. It was definitely a tough time. Lost a lot, some properties, still kept some. It was very challenging. And there's a whole, I can go on and on about that, take the whole episode. But, from there, like I said, there was a lot of pain, but a lot of good things also came out of it afterwards. But then after that, I kept my license open and I continued with just buying and selling for other people, myself, et cetera. And I was working as a full-time civil engineer at the same time. And it got to the point where my real estate business got so busy, I couldn't really do both. And at the same time, RE/MAX came to me and offered me the franchise. So I took that opportunity, opened the business in about 2015. And from there, I quit my job, just focused on that. Me and my girlfriend at the time, now my wife, we just grew the business, recruited more agents, bought more properties, got other property management business, and just kept growing everything across the board. And as we started doing more volume, then okay, it made sense to have a mortgage business, title affiliation, and a development business that we started building more properties.
Exciting to hear how that grows. And yeah, would love to talk just a little bit, just because you do have the experience kind of going through that difficult process with, the mortgage crisis and maybe how that impacted your business, how you had to maybe think on your feet, shift and adjust. Because I think a lot of times, especially when we talk about things in real estate, we're always talking about our accomplishments and all the, X amount of volume, X amount of properties and all that, which is certainly fantastic. But I think also what makes people successful is being able to move through problems. Problem solve, put solutions in place, and recognizing it doesn't always turn out fantastic, right? There's tough decisions that have to be made. There's difficult challenges. And, I heard a podcast recently where somebody said, "Hey, who here would want to 10x their income?" And he's like, "Obviously, everybody raises their hands." And he says, "Well, what if that means you have to 10x all your problems to get 10x the income?" And he's like, a lot of times those hands go down because they don't realize if I want 10x the income, I might have to endure 10x the problems to be able to make that happen. I want less problems and 10x the money. It doesn't always work that way. So I'd love to kind of hear maybe how you've shifted or adjusted or, had to make some decisions to be able to move through some difficult, challenging times.
Sure. So, and a lot of this comes with age. And, when just to put things in perspective, when I was 21, I had over 21 properties. I was like a multimillionaire many times over. So I was, I was very, I started getting overly confident, you could say, and, having too much self-belief and thinking anything I touched would turn into gold. And then the crisis happened. And basically, I'll give you a couple examples where, I was investing in, I was buying a lot of properties. And I was, like I said, everything was going up. I thought I was the man, super smart. And then, I bought, in one example is I bought a new construction property as an investment in Virginia. And these properties were like 700,000-ish, Toll Brothers, new development. And you had to show up at like 5 in the morning to be able to bid on, get on the list to get a house. And it was like every weekend there was a line, the prices were going up like 25, 30 grand a month. And it was, and I finally got one locked in and it wasn't going to be finished for a year. And I was like, wow, I'm making 25, 30 grand a month. As soon as it's done, I'm going to sell it. This is amazing. But of course, as soon as it got done, I bought it and closed. And that same day, it's like luck. The crisis kind of that happened around that same time. And Toll Brothers dumped 60 identical houses on the market at the same time. So I got stuck in that. Eventually got out of it, took a big haircut, and other situations. I took, like I said, I took out a lot of no doc mortgages, and everything was loosey goosey at the time with the mortgage brokers and the appraisers. We all know how that went. And some of them, the banks were actually going under, and I'm sure your audience knows some of them, like GMAC, New Century, some of those big banks back then. But they started going under, and they called me and said, they said, "Hey, we know you didn't fill out your application right. You did XYZ wrong, whatever, and we're calling the loan due. And we're gonna foreclose on you unless you come up with the money within a week, 2 weeks, whatever." And of course, the world's crashing financially. I'm stressed, my heart's beating fast. I'm looking in every direction to get money to pay these off. And nobody was lending at the time. So I was like, "Hey, look, I'm throwing my hands up. There's nothing I can do here, et cetera, et cetera." And then eventually, and at that point in time, I was in a very dark space, dark place. I mean, it was very depressing going from nothing to being like, "Hey, I'm the man, the most successful guy, at my age, blah, blah, blah," and then back to like getting, starting to lose everything. But what ended up happening was, for example, with those mortgages, those banks went under. They got, absorbed and serviced by somebody else. And then they came back and I got modifications and my rates were 9 to 11% range and they dropped them to 2%. And I was getting rent enough to pay the 9 or 11% interest. But now that the 2% interest is going on, the rent is still the same amount. So I ended up being a great event. But at the time I was very stressed, upset, whatever. And I think the biggest thing that I realize now, back then I was 21, now I'm 39, is it's never as bad as it seems, and it's never as good as it seems. And everything now that I'm this age, it's like almost everything bad that has happened in my life has kind of ended up in the long run being somewhat positive. And I think every situation, it's kind of what you make of it. Not just a learning experience, but there's sometimes opportunity in those situations too. So, I think it's really easy to say, like, when you're in high school and you break up with your first girlfriend, it's like the end of the world. And it's kind of that attitude. But then when you get older, you kind of shrug things off a little better. But that I think I finally learned that lesson where it's like, hey, it's never as good as it seems, but it's also never as bad as it seems. Don't get too sure of, things going good, and don't get too upset when things go bad.
So you'd mentioned, RE/MAX came to you and decided to open a franchise. Curious to hear kind of how that decision works or kind of how that process worked for you. And you were able to fit in going from, agent, or I guess I don't know for sure, team at the time, to now being, brokerage. Now, that's obviously a big adjustment. So maybe kind of talk through some things in that phase and how you're able to adjust through that.
Sure. So that's another one of those things where, so basically they scouted me out based on experience, sales volume, age, whatever, that kind of thing.
Looks, right? Good
Yeah.
looks.
I'll take that as a compliment. Thanks. But across the board, and they were like, hey, you're a good fit. And they were doing an expansion, selling a lot of franchises at the time. And, in my mind, being a little naive, and when I opened the franchise, I was still, in my 20s. So still young, and I had a lot of business experience before that and corporate experience, but still young, trying to start a new business. And long story short, thinking of it, it's like, oh wow, I opened my own brokerage and I get a 100% commission split minus the haircut from the franchise, whatever. But then when you add up all the overhead, operating costs, liability, etc., you actually end up getting a much worse split. So, you really have to do a crazy amount of volume to make it make sense to have a brokerage, because they have that old saying, brokerage stands for broke, right? Where it's very difficult for, and unfortunately, and the business has shifted a lot. When I first started, 2004 or five, the commission splits were like 50-50 for realtors, roughly. If you were good, you got a little more, whatever. And those splits have consistently gone up for agents. Just it's become like a race to the bottom. So the broker has to give out more and more and more. And eventually you're like, hey, I'm actually breaking even on the agents or losing money. And then, on the other end, the sales commissions have gone down too. So it used to be 6, 5.5, 5, plus or minus, whatever. So both sides pressure. And like I said, there's so many brokerages offering so many high incentives where for us to survive, we've had to give extremely aggressive splits. We, especially if you're a high volume performer, you can go anywhere and get whatever you want. So we give them very high quality service, very low splits. They keep most of their money. And the brokerage has almost become, even though we crush it with sales, like if you look at our numbers, you're like, wow, these guys must make a lot of money, but it almost breaks even. But going back to just, recognizing opportunity, okay, we have this business, but it creates a lot of auxiliary business, and it's almost become like a marketing arm for mortgage, for title, for development, for property management. And the property management business has been doing fantastic. But it's almost become like a marketing arm for almost all those businesses. And that's kind of with most brokerages across the board. They've almost become this like dispatch auxiliary marketing business that dispatches to all these other places. But if you're thinking that you're going to get into it and start a brokerage and you're making a bunch of money on all your agents and all these commissions, like you have a lot to learn, because it's you definitely have a huge overhead with rent, admin, staff, all that stuff. It really adds up.
And two, for you, going from kind of being responsible for just yourself to now being responsible for others, there's a lot of challenge there and putting your license on the line on behalf of others. And so, I remember even early on when I got into real estate, I started, full time in 2014. I was kind of thinking like, That brokerage thing, that sounds really tough. That's a really tough thing to be a part of. And I know when I have a problem, I call my broker and they better answer. And so to be on the other end of that, that's definitely difficult. But I can see how it's a platform for opportunity in the future versus, an investment opportunity. Are you looking to get started or scale in real estate investing but don't know your next step? Are you overwhelmed thinking about finding deals, analyzing deals, doing due diligence, and managing properties on top of it? Go ahead and push the easy button and invest with us. Real estate investing is what we do full time. We've done dozens of deals with hundreds of doors. We have the knowledge and experience to handpick the best deals that most investors can't find. We've got large off-market deals all the time where you can hopefully find returns and economies of scale that you just can't find on your own. The best thing is it's 100% passive to you for less capital than you put down trying to acquire a property on your own. Don't let this year go by where you don't make the leap, add to your portfolio, or you just sit in analysis by paralysis. To find out more, visit freedomthroughrealestate.com and click on invest. You can book a call and learn more there. So get to scaling your portfolio now with us by your side. You had mentioned, the mortgage and the title and property manage and all that. Obviously, it takes a lot of staff to be able to run that. So for you as an entrepreneur, maybe talk through that process of building and scaling and adding to your team as these opportunities have come up throughout your career.
Yeah, so that's definitely one of the most challenging parts. And we're very lucky right now. We have like a stellar team and I'm really, really happy with them. But it took, 20 years to build that. And, when we first started, it's very challenging because when you first start, you don't have a lot of business. So you can't afford to hire the best of the best. So when we first started, it was kind of like people I knew through the business and friends and whatever. And maybe they weren't the best. At that point in time, in my opinion, they were the best, hindsight, whatever. But we've had to hire and fire many people to get to where we are now. And, now we have a big business where we can afford to pay the best and they are the best. But when you first start, when you don't have a big business, it's either you have a huge negative return because you're spending so much money on overhead with the salaries, or, you don't get the best quality people. So that is very challenging and a lot of stress and heartburn. And I can't tell you, how many hundreds of thousands of dollars we've lost through that process. But it's definitely challenging. And I think, making sure, there's a couple angles to it where, you want people that are, super ambitious and have your ethos in line where, one of the biggest things for us is we never do a deal for somebody that we wouldn't do for ourselves. We're very honest about it. We talk people out of buying and selling all the time, even if it's bad for our pocket and our commission. But it's led to clients that have referred us so much business and they buy every deal through us in the long run. So having that mindset is super important to us. And, the loyalty side, all that kind of stuff. But, sometimes you can get people that are overly ambitious. And we've had this before where they kind of use you as a stepping stone. They come in, they kind of, put your business on the second tier, but they're really building their own business on the side. And that's their top priority. And they don't spend time on your business. So you have to be careful. But as long as you get people that, hey, look, like I have your back, I'm sharing all the stress and risk, we're in it together. And this is how we do business. It's been amazing. We're very lucky.
Now, out of curiosity, how much as you have your hands in multiple businesses and multiple kind of sub industries here of real estate, how much do they each kind of operate in their own silo versus maybe having some continuity between the businesses where you can maybe share services, share time, share resources together?
Yeah, so there's a lot of synergy there. From the brokerage side, we're constantly referring management business. And from the management side, so it's two separate businesses. One is Remax Plus and one is Plus Property Management. And they both have separate staff. Plus Property Management has, so it's got about five full-time staff and maybe three maintenance guys that are full-time. And then we have an accounting firm that is a subcontractor that we use to, for 1099s, managing AppFolio, QuickBooks, all that stuff. And those agents that are on that staff are also licensed with the brokerage. So when they have, so part of the incentive is, hey, if a property management client wants to sell a property, that's your deal. You can get that. That's your listing, buyer, whatever. And, from each of these businesses, like I said, we have really good staff. So, honestly, we give most of the income back to them for helping service the business. And on our end, we make a small percentage. But that's what it takes to, in my opinion, get the best of the best and have them want to have skin in the game, all that kind of stuff. And then on the brokerage side, they both do leasing. They do leasing for, property manager does leasing for property management properties. And, from their sales side, we have 50 realtors that are constantly giving property management leads, leasing service, whatever. And we have a lot of incentives and referral bonuses set up where, hey, if you give property management a lead, they give you a referral as a licensed agent, and all that kind of stuff. So everybody's really happy with it. And, one thing is, property management has a lot of headaches and liability. So as a brokerage, you also don't want to have, multiple agents trying to run their different property management businesses and all that stuff and get high liability, very messy. And it's also in property management, in my opinion, it's not worth it unless you're managing like 50 units plus. Because you're making, $50, $100 per unit, it doesn't make sense for the headache and liability. So for an agent to say, hey, I want to start a management business to manage two or three properties, well, hey, why don't you just refer it to them? They'll give you a cut. It doesn't make sense financially for you to start your own business. And that's been great. And then development, we get constant leads for the development business from these clients as well. And from the development side, we usually honestly don't even take outside customers much. We usually just develop our own properties or for somebody that we have a close relationship that we've known for a long time. So that's the development side. And then I should say this too, we're soon starting a locksmith business too. And we're buying the truck, getting the insurance, all that stuff. But that's been a service where, hey, we have so many locks, we need that service all the time. Okay, it makes sense now to start that as well. And then the mortgage side, each one of these, they have a high level director where I'm not super involved on the day-to-day. But I do get involved if there's a big problem, like, hey, this building caught fire, or we have, the cops at this building, or, whatever. But if it's a big problem, or, some legal thing, I'll get involved. But typically, they're pretty self-sufficient, unless they need some guidance on something and want to get my opinion. That's always something that comes up all the time. But they're pretty self-sufficient. Like, mortgage is completely self-sufficient. I'm just like a silent partner. Brokerage is, I'm pretty involved. And property management, it's just if there's major issues.
Now, for those businesses, how intentional were you about pursuing those opportunities? Or was it just kind of opportunities that came to you, or maybe relationships that you've cultivated where it's like, hey, let's think about doing this together? Because I think sometimes people are curious to hear how those multiple businesses come. Some people, it's like, hey, this is my 30-year plan, and I'm in year three, and I want to do this, this, and this. And for some people, it's kind of like, hey, we're just having a conversation, brainstorming, and hey, wouldn't it make sense to do this? And oh, we know so and so. And so, curious to kind of hear how much of it was really intentionality versus just kind of stuff that more organically maybe happened.
Yeah, so with property management, originally, it was like 20, 30 units. I was managing it all myself. And then I hired, and then I didn't want to do it anymore. I was like, hey, look, it doesn't make a lot of money. It's a lot of headaches. I'd rather have somebody else do it. So I hired a company. And as you know, within months, our vacancy was up. We had more than normal maintenance, all that stuff. So I fired them and I hired another one. And they did the same thing. And I hired another one, same thing. And I was like, all right, screw this. We need to do it ourselves. So brought in a couple of buddies and people that were in the business. We did the management ourselves, and that was natural because it just there, we couldn't find somebody that could handle it. And of course we're gonna lose our customers, and most of the properties were my own, so I couldn't afford to have vacancies because I had mortgages, all that stuff. So we ended up doing it ourselves because we just couldn't find a good one. And then the brokerage, and it happened naturally with RE/MAX recruiting us. And then going down the pipeline, I think you have to really be honest and look at your business. And looking at our business, like I said, the brokerage doesn't make a lot of income net, but it has a huge volume and a lot of transactions. So what are other ways to monetize that, or figure that out? Where I'm not one of those people that says, okay, I'm gonna shut the doors, I'm going out of business because it doesn't make sense, whatever. And pride can be a good thing or bad thing, but that's pride talking right there. It's like, hey, I'm not gonna let everybody in the world see that I gave up or whatever. That, like I said, sometimes it's gonna be good or bad, but that kind of forces you to figure outside, think outside the box. And it wasn't like, okay, we're not making any money and there's no volume, right? There's a lot of volume, but we're making no money. So how do we milk each transaction and get a little bit more? And long story short, having the relationship with the mortgage company, title, development, property management does help us give better service to our customers too. So it's a win-win. They get better service, they get better deals, and we also make a little more on each transaction.
In terms of these different businesses, I know you mentioned you had great directors. Where do you spend the majority of your time, on a given week? Is it mostly just high level leadership growth? Is it, bopping in, kind of hands in to a few of the different businesses, or what's a week look like for you?
Sure. So it's really all over the place. It's really hard to say like what I'm doing each week because it's like, I don't even put anything on my calendars on Mondays because it's always crazy. For example, it's like something in the air where it's like a million phone calls and emergencies, whatever. So it's kind of like constantly, I would say on a daily basis, I'll get like one or two calls from agents talking about an issue they're having on a deal. I'll get one or two calls from management, something that they need ideas on or direction. And then, from the brokerage side, a couple calls there. Hey, this deal, how to process this, whatever. And then, on the development side, I am constantly meeting with. So the part that is my passion, what I like to do, is the development side and buying and owning real estate. So I try to put most of my time there while trying to keep everything else moving in the right direction. So from that end, I'm constantly meeting with architects, township meetings, engineers, that kind of thing, just because that's my passion. That's where I want to focus on. But those other businesses, they're pretty self-sufficient. And, as far as like, we have trainers, we have recruiters, we have all that kind of stuff. But, as far as recruiting agents and developing agents and all that kind of stuff, we used to do a lot of that, but then it started to seem like for the most part, not to say it's a waste of time, but it wasn't a super efficient way of using your time because, you'll put all this time into someone and then they'll decide to switch careers or they're like, hey, this is, not for me, whatever. And, there's too many, I think, licensed agents. I'm sure and everybody knows, there's too many people that are licensed. The barrier to entry is too low. So because of that, you have a revolving door of people getting in and out. So trying to train and coach people is not a super high priority, but if people show incentive and they're willing to do it, hey, we'll put the time in if you're willing to put the time in. So we do have some people like that that come up here and there, and we really put a lot of energy and time into them, and they do become all stars and a big part of our team. But that's a basic week what it looks like.
What does the future look like for you as you think about the next few years? Obviously you've grown a lot and built a lot, and so what are you thinking for the future?
Yeah, so definitely continuing to develop the construction development business. Buying more land, buying, developing, hopefully bigger and bigger developments, but also getting into more so social media. I mean, we're already in social media and do digital marketing and SEO and all that kind of stuff. But we're in the process of starting our own podcast, so hopefully you can be a guest on ours.
Sweet.
But that I think is the way the world is going. I'm not a social media podcast. I'm a very private person in the trenches working, but you have to do it these days, and it's super important. And being a big on social media and marketing and having a podcast can kind of feed everything else. So I think that's, the direct what we're going to focus on.
Thank you so much, Mateen, for coming on, sharing your story. For people that want to reach out to you or learn more about you or list with you, manage with you, whatever it might be, how can they do so?
Yeah, so I would say check out our website, plusrealtors.com for the brokerage and plusmanagers.com for the property management. And we're on all the major platforms, YouTube, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, etc.
I love those URLs. Those are fantastic. I'm a sucker for a good, easy to remember URL. So thank you so much for coming on, sharing your story, and best of luck as you continue to grow in the future.